This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the USDF's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford, and we'd like to remind you that the views of the guests and hosts of the USDF's official podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And on this week's episode, we'll be hearing from the USDF's president, George Williams, as we review the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan. And we'll also be hearing from the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame inductee, Hilda Gurney, about her legendary two-time Olympic horse, Keen, who was also inducted into the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame in 1997. And in our news segment this week, nearly 400 competitors from 39 states converged on the Kentucky Horse Park last week to compete in the 2016 U.S. Dressage Finals presented by Adequan. The USDF would like to thank all of the volunteers who helped throughout the week and congratulate all of the riders who qualified and rode in the finals. And now to celebrate some of the winners. The winner of the Grand Prix Adult Amateur Championship was Lauren Thornlow and her horse Royal Koenig on a score of 64%. The Grand Prix Freestyle Adult Amateur Championship was won by Lynette Wandsworth with Wheats G with a score of 66.750. Chase Hickok with Hyperion Farm Sagacious HF won both the Grand Prix Open on 70.66 and the Grand Prix Freestyle Open Championship with 74.167. Endel Otts of Wellington, Florida, rode the Oldenburg Gelding Samhitas, owned by Otts and Gary van der Plug, to take the Prix Saint-Georges Open Championship and was also awarded the Mika Christofferson Perpetual Trophy presented by the USDF Region 4 with a score of 71.0%. Last year's Prix Saint-Georges Adult Amateur Champion Rachel Hicks of Prospect, Kentucky, successfully defended her title and was awarded the Janine Westmoreland Malone Perpetual Trophy presented by the USDF, but this time it was aboard her Rhinelander stallion Don Cartier on a score of 68.37. Adding to the excitement of the final day, the top-scoring riders in various divisions from each of the Great American USDF Regional Championships competed on regional teams in the second annual USDF Finals Regions Cup, vying with competitors from across the country for awards and bragging rights for their respective USDF region, in which they qualified to attend the finals. Coming out on top after 4 days of championship competition was the Region 3 team, comprised of Christy Trubenbach-Lund and Living Lucky at training level, adult amateur, Amy Swerdlund with Quilute CCW at second level, adult amateur, and Endel Otts with Samhitas in the Prix Saint-Georges Open. Their winning average score was 70.498%. You'll find more information, including the complete final results, photo galleries, and news archives from the 2016 U.S. Dressage Finals presented by Adequan on the competition's official website at usdressagefinals.com. And you can also find video on demand from select championship performances on the USEF's network at usefnetwork.com. The USDF President George Williams joins us now to share his experiences of this year's USDF Dressage Finals presented by Adequan. George, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, here we are looking back at another US Dressage Finals. This is the fourth, I believe, and it was very much a family affair for you and your daughter.
Yes, that's true. It's ever since this started, and I have to say going back to for the last 20 years or whatever that we had been hoping to have the U.S. Dressage Finals, I always thought it would be fun to ride in it. And so I finally got my chance this year. I competed in the I-2 Open Division. And also my daughter was in the Grand Prix Division. So it was fun, a lot of fun.
Yes, you rode Sarah Anderson's unique. You finished third and sixth. So was this a partnership that you've had for a while with this horse, George?
Sarah has been a client of ours, of our family, for a number of years. So the horse has been with us. But over the last year or so, Sarah has been very busy with work and with school. And so I have been riding the horse more, and rode her pretty much all of last winter, and had decided in the spring that maybe I would just, you know, see what she'd be like to compete. And so I took her into her first I2 class, and she did fairly well. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll try for the regional championships. And that went well, and then moved on to the finals. So it had been 2 years since I competed, and it's just a lot of fun to get back into the competition arena. I really am now doing it for the fun of it more than anything. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, a busy week for you then, of course, in your role as the president of the USDF, but time to always watch your daughter compete. And Noel rode Melissa Mulcahy's Cervelo. She made it to the final. What was it like being a parent? Do you get nervous, George?
I think the worst is you get nervous as a coach and you get nervous as a parent. And so the worst is when you're both the coach and the parent. I find it quite nerve-wracking, to tell you the truth. You know, because you as a coach, obviously you want the best, and as a parent, you always want the best for your child. So I kind of hold my breath through the whole test.
So what was the takeaway then for both Noel and for yourself riding in the finals, George, this year?
Well, Noel had ridden in it, I don't know if it was last year. She'd ridden it once before. But for me, I have to say, you know, to be able to do it as a competitor, see it through the competitor's eyes, was really, I think, quite useful. From a competitor side, it seemed to run quite smoothly. Because, of course, as a competitor, you're not so aware of the inner workings that make everything happen. So it seemed to come across as it seemed to run quite smoothly. You know, I think there are little things that when we look at how we do it next year, that things that I can bring to their attention, to the attention of the organizing committee, on how it might be a little bit easier on the competitors. But I think all in all, I have to say, it's an impressive competition. It's quite an experience to compete in the All-Tech Arena. The atmosphere is pretty electric, and I think it's a lot of fun to be right to be sort of highlighted, if you will, or showcased like that, and to have an opportunity to ride in a indoor arena of that nature.
And for many riders, yes, George, through the year, this becomes the highlight of most riders' competition season, doesn't it? Because it is the finals, it is something they can aspire to compete in. Does this mean that we've got a more exciting atmosphere each year as the event matures?
I think it is, and I think it's really great to see. I think what you just said, it becomes a goal for a lot of competitors. It's great to see the excitement of the riders and the joy when they do compete there. So many are eager to have their photographs taken within the All-Tech. I think just that opportunity to feel like they're being showcased and have a chance to shine is for me, it's just wonderful, and it's very moving, actually, to watch.
And how do you think this year's event, George, has improved over previous years now, as you learn from each year and take ideas forward, as you suggested? Each year you bring ideas forward to improve the event.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just refining certain aspects of it from an organizational or management side. It gets smoother. Obviously we know what issues are coming up, what problems, and have better ways of dealing with them, making sure that the stabling is ready for competitors when they arrive and easier for them to move into. And it's all those little things, I think, that we can just keep on improving. This year, as you probably heard, of course, at the end of the show, one of the transformers going to the Kentucky Horse Park went out. So the last several hours of the competition were a little bit trickier because there was no power going to actually most of the horse park. but including the Alltech. And unfortunately, some is on generator, but the Alltech was a little darker than we would have liked, and that presented certain obstacles, but everybody overcame it, and the show went on. So there's some things that we, no matter how hard we plan, we just can't necessarily plan for completely.
Some things you can't control, of course. No, and if you were to summarize then this year's event, George, how would you reflect on it?
Overall, I think each year it gets smoother, easier to run. I think it's interesting to see the quality of competitors. And for me, it's really good to see the professionals that keep coming back and keep returning. And I think it's slowly becoming more of a goal for a lot of our professionals. I think from the adult amateur point of view, it's really, does showcase them. It gives them an opportunity to compete sort of in the big time and to see what it's like to be a little bit more in the big time, so to speak. And I think, as I said, I think this year it just gets, smoother, basically smoother, and runs more and more easily.
Well, having competed in it, and as well as your daughter again, were there any special moments that you will reflect on when you look back at these finals, George?
I think just for me, just having the opportunity to be in the arena and competing was quite special. But as I say, and I think I've said this every single year, watching the riders in the award ceremony is really very moving. And to me, that in the end really makes it all worthwhile.
Wonderful. Anything you would like to add to, just to remind everyone that this is an opportunity for all levels of competition, no matter where you are in the country, there is an opportunity to ride in the U.S. Dressage Finals each fall.
That's right, yeah. From training level through Grand Prix, and of course, we have the freestyles now, so it does provide a lot of wonderful opportunities for our members of USDF.
All right, and you can find the full results on the website at usdressagefinals.com. George, thank you very much for coming on the program, and congratulations on having a family fair there at the finals this year.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Hilda Gurney joins me now to talk about that wonderful partnership that she had with Keenan. I'm sure, Hilda, this is a conversation you never tire of, talking about this partnership that you had with him. But anyway, welcome back to the program. Lovely to talk to you again.
Thank you.
It is a partnership that has stood the test of time, in that people continue to remember the relationship that you had, that unique partnership that you had. What kind of questions do you get these days about him?
I mean, most of the generation these days doesn't remember him. But every once in a while, I get people who were at the Olympics when I rode him. I rode him in two Olympics. And they do ask about, how lucky I was, or say how lucky I was to have him, which is, I totally concur. I was so fortunate to have such an incredible animal.
He certainly did. Those two Olympics, we should remind everyone, were Montreal in 76 and Los Angeles in 84. But he was known worldwide for the partnership that you had with him all around the world, and notably the results that you had. But let's talk about his beginnings and how you first met Hilda.
Well, I was really into eventing, and I had two thoroughbreds and had won both United States Intermediate and Advanced Event Championships on one of mine called Flag Self. But the last event I was in was two people broke their backs, and Charlie Plum was a quadriplegic after that. And I went there for the luck of, I won the event, but for the luck of fate, it could have been me, because you have to go so fast in eventing, and the jumps are treacherous, and any horse can make a mistake at any time. Charlie Plum's horse just fell on ice plant, slipped on ice plant and fell on him. And I decided dressage was more what I wanted to do anyway at that time. So I went to the Olympics year before in 68 in Mexico City, and I saw the kind of horses they were using there. And they had these wonderful warm bloods. And that's the year that Papel was for the Russian team, and Joseph Neckerman still rode, Harry Bolt rode there. And I got to really see the warm bloods for the first time. And there were no warm bloods in California, not at all at that time. So I looked for a horse to buy that would be similar to what I saw in the Olympics. And most of the thoroughbreds were little and small moving. But I went to a thoroughbred farm in Colton, and I found this big 17 two-hand thoroughbred three-year-old in a cow pasture. I got on him. He hadn't been ridden for heaven knows. He had tried racing him as a two-year-old, and he couldn't fit in starting gate, so that sort of stopped that right there since he couldn't fit. And then they threw him out with the brood mares and the cows in this pasture. And I got on him, put a saddle on. Of course, he bucked me right off. But then I got back on, and he really seemed to be like the warm bloods I saw at the Olympics. And he was just this huge, gigantic, very awkward at that time, chestnut, and his registered name was Willoughby, which I wanted to get rid of because he sort of moved like a Willoughby at that time, sort of gawky and uncoordinated. Anyway, I bought him. I paid $1,000 for him and brought him home and started with him, and that I changed his name to King and just went for it. And I really, of course, was just a school teacher and had no great ambitions, but I loved the dressage I saw at the Olympics in Mexico City, and we had Kira Doughton at that time competing in California. And I went up and watched her lessons with Alio Spadaski. He was training her for the Olympics. And I really started bringing this horse along. I had worked my way through college before I started teaching school, training horses, and I also taught children at Pinecrest School. So I was doing a lot of teaching and a lot of training. I was riding still about 8 horses a day plus my 2 and going to college. I had a lot of experience training horses, and I just started training King. And I used him for eventing at first, and he did quite well. He won the training level at Ramtap, but landing off a Trachner fence, he twisted his ankle. And when I jumped him after that event, he was a little sore, so I just kept doing dressage. And he trained up so fast that I actually showed him Grand Prix as a 7-year-old.
That was notable, really, right there, that, you know, you bought him as a 3-year-old for $1,000 in 1969, and just 4 years later, he was going international, and then 5 years later, he was representing the country in the Pan American Games.
Yes, and he was marvelous there. I was very surprised, yes. I did put a lot of effort in 74. I did take him east in my 2-horse trailer. By then, I had Franz Rohovansky as my coach from the Spanish Riding School. He had been head rider at the Spanish Riding School. And he started coming to California, giving clinics. I had him as often as I could get him to come. And then he went east with me and some friends, and I got a scholarship to the American Dressage Institute. And I did some shows, and he did quite well on the East Coast shows in 74. And then 75, I went back. I got qualified for the Festival Championships and went back and ended up fourth there. And then we went on to the Pan American Games. And unfortunately for Edith, her horse for the Pan Am Games, Stalwitz, went lame. The Pan Am Games were in Mexico City. And I got the 3rd spot on the team, and he came out winning the silver medal individually. So that was quite something. I was astounded the whole way. Nobody was more surprised than myself.
Well, not just the individual silver, but also the team gold as well. So that was a landmark year for you, a milestone really in his career, which was to go on and represent the team so many times and also make a mark in Germany too, in the Grand Prix Special in Aachen, because that's no mean feat, is it, for a thoroughbred to go over from the U.S. and make its mark in German dressage, you know, on their doorstep.
Yeah, he's just absolutely incredible. I wish I had the knowledge and skill then that I have now. I mean, my riding's improved, but of course, I've never had another King. I just so wish I had been able to ride even better, because there was no horse really that can compare to him at that time in the world. But I couldn't ride that well. I mean, I was brand new in the sport. I just came off eventing. I didn't have a good seat, and I didn't have the knowledge and feel that I have now. But I've never been quite so lucky to get another King. they don't grow on trees. They're so special to have a horse that loves the sport. And you can almost think what you want, and he does it. He's so eager. And he was so responsive.
He was a big horse for you, Hilda, at 17, too.
Yes, but he was, I mean, I rode him in a thick snaffle. I rode him with short spurs. He was just eager. I mean, it took no strength to ride him except to sit the gates, because his gates were so springy.
Tell us about your reaction when you realized that, okay, you've done the Pan American Games, or, you know, very early in his career, but then you were selected for your first Olympic Games. Do you remember when you received that news and how you felt about that as being a major milestone in your career as a rider?
Actually, I think the most notable thing for me was the first Pan Am Games. The Olympics, you just, you know, did selections, and he kept winning. And as I say, nobody was more surprised than I. Everything, it was just 1 year between. Everything was just such a rush, and I, of course, working full-time. And I taught special education by then in L.A. City Elementary. So I was always working full-time, and then I had an hour drive both ways, and then riding most of the time in the dark. And I didn't have a real facility. I had some stalls on our property, and I put an arena in on a neighbor's property. But it was, you know, just a rush to try to do everything. I never think I really thought about it. I just tried to do the best I could. And Keane just kept winning. And as I say, nobody was ever more surprised than I.
I want to talk a little bit more about your training facilities there, that you mentioned your trainer at that time, and also the environment you were training in. You're coming home, as you say, from a long day's working and commuting and maybe riding in the dark there. Give us a little bit bigger picture of that.
I lived with my parents because I couldn't afford on a teacher's salary to have the horse and have a whole apartment. Not that I was ever in the house except for sleeping, but I would get up at 4 in the morning, try to either get the horse out in the morning or get the horse out in the evening. And I had a couple other horses. I made a little arena. We had a tractor, and I carved out an arena in the little valley right next to where my stalls were. We had 40 acres at that time. And I had Pony Club, and we put in a little cross-country course with the kids helping me. Anyway, quite a few dressage judges came out of that group, and quite a few of my kids in the Pony Club gradually got the Grand Prix, too. But it was just what I could do in the field, which my parents then sold and got subdivided. And at that point in time, I moved out and bought a farm in Keene Ridge, which I call Keene Ridge after Keene. He's buried here.
Take us to your first Olympic Games in Montreal and your memories of that.
It was wild. I had some wonderful memories. We had our own Olympic village for the riders, and it was in Bromont. So we were an hour and a half from Montreal. I remember trailering to the opening ceremonies and participating in the open ceremonies. Well, busing, not trailering, but busing. I had been there the year before because we had a training event there with USCT. And I did these things pretty much during the summer, except I got a waiver from the LA City Schools to allow me to stay for the Olympics, because that was already into the a few weeks into the new school year, but they let me have a few weeks off. I remember really having a lot of fun with Colonel Youngquist, was our coach for the team, and he had been coming out to California and with the clinics with USCT and giving his clinics in, so I had him as well as Rohovovsky helping me, and more to Colonel Youngquist, because USCT really helped us there. And then when I went east for the selections, I had the whole summer almost, because they sent us east very early and chose the team early, and I was able to spend most of the summer and part of the fall there working with Colonel Youngquist 5 days a week. So we really got, Colonel Youngquist really has to get credit for having us tuned up for the Olympics. I really went in knowing exactly how to ride every movement, exactly how to do everything in the test, thanks to him. He was just did a fabulous job with our team. And then I was with Edith and Dorothy and John Winnett. I guess John and Edith have now passed, but Dorothy's still, like me, out there competing and having a lot of fun. It was a great time. And it was more fun, too, because our event team, the cross country was right there also, and our event team won the gold medal in eventing.
Yes, one. Tad Coffin with Ballycore. And of course, John Michael Plum with Better and Better. He was on that team, wasn't he? As well as, I think, Bruce Davidson, Irish Cap, and Mary Ann Tusky would have been the other one. So some of your friendly eventers over there. And we should point out that you just got pipped by the one and only Rainer Klimke, didn't you, to the bronze medal individually, but you did come away with the team medal from Montreal.
Yes, we did get the bronze team medal.
After Montreal, then, did that make you hungry to do another Olympic Games?
Well, it was interesting. One thing that happened at Montreal is the Germans came up and offered me $1 million for Keene. I mean, I drove home without any money, and there was no credit cards or cell phones in those days. But I never considered selling Keene because he was my horse, and I owed it to him and to the United States to keep him. But I think it would have been very bad for U.S. dressage to have sold him to Germany. And then he even offered me a blank check after I turned down the million. I thought that was very interesting. On my way to and from, I shipped Keene in my own trailer six times to the East Coast during all these selection trials and different Pan Am Games and world championships. I competed one world championship with him. And when I trailered him, each night I would stay somewhere on the way there and on the way home, and I would let the Dressage Federation, so I would call them and say, do you know someone who has a nice stable where I can take my horse? And would they like to watch me ride or watch me give a demo? And I did that pretty much most days or every other day going and coming home. So Keene, I think, had a big impact on the United States, having done that six times across the country, giving these demos when I rode him and offering for people to watch. In some places, there were quite a big crowd to watch, and I think it really helped the sport, especially since he was, you know, a thoroughbred off the track, and I was a school teacher, and it just showed that it doesn't have to be an elitist sport. If you happen to have the right horse and you happen to be as lucky as I was, you can do it.
I know there are going to be people listening that just heard you say that you turned down $1 million and you were a school teacher, Hilda. There can't be many school teachers out there that would resist $1 million because they love their horse.
Yeah, I never considered it. Well, and then they offered me a blank check when I turned that down. But I could not have sold him. And my farm is named after him in his honor. And he made my life. I had this beautiful farm and have had a wonderful, wonderful life. And I really owe it to that horse. And I don't think I could live with myself if I had ever sold him.
Now, he was well into his teens when you got to the LA Olympics in 84. Tell us about that memory, because it was in your backyard. That must have been pretty special for you with him.
It was. When you go and represent your country in the Olympics or the Pan Am Games or the World Equestrian Games, it's not you anymore. You're the representative for your country. So the weight on your shoulders is unbelievable. At least it is on my shoulders. It's an unbelievable responsibility. I don't know. I never take international competition as fun or frivolous. It's an honor to do it. It's an honor to participate. But the responsibility of doing the best you can and having your horse just right as best you can and taking advantage of the coaching that you're able to get, because coaching was always a little bit of a problem for me in California at that time, it's a huge responsibility. And it's just the way international competition is. So, yes, the camaraderie was good and the experience was good, but it's always just a very, very heavy responsibility.
At that point in his career, obviously you were looking to give the best you could for him and for your country. But what were your biggest takeaways from that experience in L.A., Hilda?
Well, we had a good Olympics. That's the year that Robert and I were on the team along with, and I'm not thinking of her name, I'm so sorry. She's British now.
Sandy Phillips.
Sandy
Pfluger, as she was then, of course, absolutely.
She rides for Britain. The three of us we didn't do as well as we wanted to do. I think we were all very disappointed in ourselves. We had to enter the arena in L.A. by riding through a tunnel under the stands with thousands of people in the stands, so it's very, very difficult to get into the arena. And we did practice riding under it the day before, but there weren't any people. So just getting into the arena was very, very difficult. And then when Keen went in, the stands, of course, is a U.S. horse. They were very, very excited. It was not my best ride. I've never even watched it on video because I was so disappointed in how I rode.
It would have been a lot of pressure, I would imagine, Hilda.
Yeah, it was not an easy Olympics.
So looking back on your partnership with Keen, what would you consider now to be your, say, three career highlights with him?
Oh, certainly the Pan Am Games in Mexico City. He had his second Pan Am Games in Puerto Rico, but that was another difficult competition. I think Aachen, where he did so well at Aachen. That was wonderful, and I remember riding in the big stadium for the honor rounds, past these humongous jumps, and Joseph Neckermann, such a wonderful man he was the top German rider at that time, he coached me while we rode around for the honor rounds in front of the public. It was just so nice that he was so sweet and helped me ride better. I had other times in Germany, Harry Bolt, even though I didn't sell him the horse, Harry Bolt has coached me until about 2 years ago, regularly since. And the fact that I had his respect and having him willing to work with me with various horses since has been very memorial to me and meant a lot to me. Those are really the highlights. The international competitions themselves, I always felt a little too much responsibility, and they were very, very serious. But in between, the coaching and the shows were a lot of fun.
And if someone is listening, Hilda, that has found their own Keen, that has really changed their career as a dressage rider, and they're just wondering what this is going to mean to them, what message would you give to them?
Well, I think sticking with a horse and bringing the horse up to Grand Prix and then being able to compete him at Grand Prix, whether or not you make an Olympics, because I've trained a lot of horses since, no Keens, but a lot of really nice horses since. I enjoy the journey. I love working with the horse. I love the relationship with the horse. I love the fact that if I train a good horse, not every horse likes dressage, but most, if you train them well, do like dressage. They get into it. That you and the horse have great times together and totally trust each other and really meld as one. And that's what really I love. I love the journey of training a horse.
It certainly is a journey, and is one that has changed your dressage career, of course, with Keen. And he left us in 1989, so he had a very good innings. And where was he in his retirement? On the farm there that's named after him, Hilda?
Well, I never actually retired him. I thought of retiring him, but every time we'd go to a show, he was sound. He stayed sound for me until he died. He died of a stroke. I had him put down, but he stroked that day and went down with a rider. Didn't hurt the rider. He went down very slowly, laid down. And then I called the vet and put him down. And I buried him on the property. So he lives in my backyard.
The biggest takeaways that you had from this partnership with him were clearly those highlights that you mentioned. And the character that he was, the personality that he was, made that partnership what it is, Hilda. It really was one for the record books. And we're delighted that you still enjoy reflecting on that partnership. And I want to thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing those memories with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And finally, a reminder that you'll have the opportunity to join the USDF for the 2017 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference, which will be featuring Lilo Four and Hans Christian Matheson, who will present the FEI trainers and judges with the opportunity to interact, share ideas, and gain a perspective of the challenges faced by both trainers and judges. The 2017 conference will be held on January the 16th and 17th at High Meadow Farm in Loxahatchee, Florida. Advanced registration is now open by visiting the USDF website at usdf.org for more details. And the conference will be held in conjunction with the 2017 USEF Judges Forum. And for more information about that Judges Forum, please visit the USEF's website at usef.org. And for more educational information and resources, don't forget to check back to the USDF's website at usdf.org and following the link to eTrack. You can also download this podcast from the iTunes Podcast Store to any podcast app, including Stitcher. And be sure to follow us on social media to hear about the next episode of the USDF's official podcast. Until the next time, thanks for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.